You know, I would be willing, under the right circumstances, to do that for you.
Oh, honey. Surely you don't want that.
I surely do, and don't call me honey. Airplane two.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan and Dan here with you. We're doing an impromptu Thursday into Friday episode. I'll get into that in a little bit and explain why. Before we do everything, you know the drill. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, Twitter. You go follow us. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow the blog at GothamSN. You can follow Dan at DanSchneierNFL. And as always, subscribe. Every subscription helps the podcast grow. We appreciate every single listener. So we're on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, soon to be Spotify. Still working out those details, but Spotify is coming. So if you're a Spotify user, keep your eyes open for that. Let's get into it. Dan, guest host this week. This is my fault, I guess, technically. I had strep throat earlier in the week, could not record on our usual Tuesday day. Weiss, God bless him, you can follow him at NYG Daily, could not join me for his normal co-host spot today due to family obligations. So Dan was gracious enough to fill in last minute. If you're a listener of the podcast, you already know Dan. Dan's been like a 3 or 4 time recurring guest. We love Dan. Dan's great. So Dan, thank you for filling in such short notice. I think I messaged you, yesterday asking you to fill in. So Dan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is going to be different this time, actually, now as a co-host for this, guest co-host for this. So I'm excited to see how this rolls without Weiss. Not that I don't love Weiss, because Weiss is probably the lifeblood and the guy who got me into this thing. I say the word lifeblood because I'm going to talk about that a little bit later when it comes to Dave Gettleman, because I know me and you have different opinions on Dave Gettleman that we'll get to later. Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see how this rolls with just two people is all I was trying to say. And we'll see how it goes. And I'm excited to talk Giants because it's been a really, really down season. The last time I talked, I think things were looking a lot more positively than they were now. And that's probably only because they hadn't been officially eliminated for the playoffs. Right. And there was still some thought that maybe they can turn things around. But there's a lot to look forward to now that the GM search is underway.
Absolutely. But before we get into the GM search, let's just talk about last week. I know it's you guys are listening to this on a Friday and you're gearing up for the Arizona game. We'll touch on the Arizona game later towards the end of the podcast. We'll touch on the GM search for sure. That's probably going to be the meat and potatoes of this podcast, but it wouldn't be an NYG Weekly unless we recap last week very briefly. They were up, man. They were up. And I was feeling, you know what? Obviously, I did want them to lose because at the end of the day, they're out of it. And the only thing that matters is securing that number 2 overall draft spot because let's face it, the Browns are terrible. And, you know, I know a lot of people will say, oh, but it's a division rival and I really want to beat the division rivals. Like, you know what? Yes. And that was sort of my spin zone when they were up. But in the back of my head, I knew that they were going to blow it. And at the end of the day, what it came down to was special teams. And for me, at least, that's going to be the main point that I harp on because it's something that I've spoken about a lot, honestly, on this podcast, at least this season. I've brought it up numerous times. Tom Quinn's units have been flat out terrible for years now. And I don't know if it's a scheme thing or if it's a talent thing, but the only time in the last 5-6 years that I have felt confident that we'll be able to break this one, we'll be able to take this punt return to the house, we'll be able to take this kickoff to the house, was either when David Wilson was returning kicks or Odell was out there returning punts. Outside of that, Dwayne Harris, whatever the scheme is, has been god-awful. And they allowed a blocked field goal, a blocked extra point, and they're driving at the end of the game, and they're down 5. And they needed a touchdown, and you know what? Maybe if they execute a little bit early on, all they need is a field goal. It's the little things. It's the execution. Weiss harps on this all the time. Execution. You got to execute. And to me, it's reflective of poor coaching when a team cannot execute properly. And for special teams, that goes back to Tom Quinn. I do not believe he will be back next year. I don't believe Spags will be back next year. I don't believe Mike Sullivan will be back next year. But at this point in time, we're talking Tom Quinn. Dan, I'll throw it to you. That was my main point. I'm sure we'll pivot a little bit and talk about other aspects of the game. But to me, that's what it came down to, was lazy and poor execution on special teams.
Yeah, and I think Weiss was actually, when he goes with that, he actually channels his inner Coughlin with that execute. Yeah. I was never a big fan of that because I always thought it was a little bit of a cop-out. But I do agree with, as far as it comes to special teams, I mean, I would love to agree with you and say Tom Quinn will not be back next year. But the guy's been employed now for the last 6 years as the Giants special teams coach, a really terrible six-year stretch that is unbelievable. I've never seen someone have a worse special teams unit and keep a job for this long. So there must be something going on with Quinn. He must be a good old boy. He's got the last name Quinn, a good old Mara boy.
Exactly.
In that Giants organization. So if Mara is true and to his word about wholesale changes coming in the Giants organization, they will get rid of Quinn. And I'm joking with that. I think they will obviously get rid of him. He is arguably the worst head coach I've ever seen have a five-year stretch with the Giants. Just looking at the stats from only this year, Giants entered week 15, number 27 in kick return yardage, number 29 in punt return yardage. Their long punt return for the season was 20 yards. Their long kick return, 60 yards. They were dead last with a 38.7 net punt average. They were 29th of 32 with a 72.7 field goal percentage overall. And you can blame that on the kicker, on the punter, but you can also blame that on the execution of the gunner teams on punt game and the blocking for the field goals. As we've obviously just saw two kicks blocked last week. And this is not the first time his special teams have really cost the Giants against in week two, when really this season was not completely over. This was a massive momentum switch when the Giants allowed that punt return touchdown to the Lions, really changed that game, changed the season in my mind. And, you know, these special teams units are consistently ranking in this 27, 29, 30, dead last 32 range with Tom Quinn. It's amazing this guy is still employed with the team. And I agree with you. That's my reason for the loss last week. I know that the defense gave up massively big plays over the top. But you know what? I expect that when you have street linebacker Kelvin Shepard leading the team in snaps for the most part. Leading the linebackers in snaps. And you've got guys like, let me actually bring this up so I'm not going off the top of my head here, because I looked at it earlier this week and I was actually stunned. So Ross Cockrell led the team in snaps. Kelvin Shepard had the fifth most snaps. Eli Apu, who hasn't played in 5 weeks, had the third most snaps. Obviously, you got OV and Jason Pierre-Paul, two and three in snaps alongside Darian Thompson, but none of those three players are playing well right now. You can only hope Jason Pierre-Paul is injured based on how bad he's played. Then you got Andrew Adams and Devin Kennard. Devin Kennard's a normal starter, but Andrew Adams and Calvin Munson playing a ton of snaps. Daryl Morris, have you heard of him? I barely have. He played snaps at cornerback. Robert Thomas played a bunch. Ray Armstrong played some snaps. Brandon Dixon played some snaps. Ryan Murphy, who was called up earlier that week, played some snaps. And yet their talented fifth-round pick Avery Moss only played three snaps. So, I mean, we're looking at a situation where you can blame the defense, but the defense is what it is at this point, and I'm going to put the blame with you on Tom Quinn and the special teams.
I had to mute myself briefly because I was puking everywhere. Not the strep. Every single statistic that you just read out. I mean, the special teams rankings, and then you went back-to-back special teams rankings, defensive snaps. I mean, oh, God. Let's get a little positive for a minute. And for those, like, this is why we have Dan on. I mean, those stats were just unbelievable. Sterling Shepard, if all he becomes in his entire Giants career is an Eagle killer, then he was well worth the second round pick. Amazing game from Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard versus the Eagles this year, 18 catches, 272 yards, and two touchdowns. Sterling Shepard in his career versus the Eagles, he has 4 games and 4 touchdowns. So on the offensive side of the ball, there was a lot of good to be had. Obviously, one of those was Sterling Shepard. Number two, which I feel like is flying a little bit under the radar, but it shouldn't, is Eli Manning had an outstanding game. 37 completions on 57 attempts, 434 yards, three touchdowns, and an interception. So he showed that even against one of the league's best defenses, granted they played like dog shit, he can still perform. Sterling Shepard, while not a number one, proved that when Odell comes back and when a real offensive coordinator gets in here and gets Engram more involved, he can be a very productive wide receiver. The defensive numbers, I mean, it's just terrible. You know, the Avery Moss stat that you read with how many snaps do you have? Five?
Three.
Three? That's embarrassing, especially considering the fact that Spags came out and said that he wanted to give Ovi and JPP less snaps to keep them more fresh. And then what the fuck does he do? He goes out and gives Avery Moss, a rookie this year, three total snaps. Absolutely embarrassing. And it's something we saw out of Spags' defense last year. And one of the reasons that JPP and Olivier Vernon got way injured towards the end of the season is because he just doesn't trust the youth on the team to fill in and give his stars, or supposed stars, haven't been playing like stars, breaks down the stretch. So on the defensive side of the ball, absolute disaster. Special teams disaster. At least the offense played well. We saw some flashes out of Eli Manning, Sterling Shepard, and you know, it sort of begs the question, and it's a topic that we have coming up. If Eli is able to play like this against a league top defense in one of the worst league offenses, you know, what's next for his career? But Dan, I'll throw it to you to touch more on the offense.
Yeah, I was definitely impressed with what I saw from the offense. And you mentioned Sterling Shepard, and obviously he's been an Eagles killer. He has 383 yards in four games against them and four touchdowns to go along with, I think, 29 receptions in those four games. But what I've really noticed about Shepard, and what I really like about Shepard, is that the first season, and I talked about this on the podcast, I actually joined you guys this offseason. We talked about some of their big moves, and I talked about why, you know, I thought Shepard would kind of come out of the mix if everything went right for the Giants this year, and Brandon Marshall would definitely take over more of a role. And what I talked about, the reason why I was so worried about Shepard myself, was that when I watched his tape at Oklahoma, he was making explosive plays out of the slot, down the seam, and also on real routes. And he was making vertical plays in the vertical passing game. Again, we went almost eight games this season, or at least until the very point where Ben McAdoo gave up play calling duties to Mike Sullivan, and Shepard was not used on vertical routes again. Now, for a little period, it was like three or four games, Shepard was injured while Sullivan took over as play caller. But the minute Sullivan got his hands on Shepard, we started to see Shepard just start to break out. And the reason is they started to use him on more vertical routes. Yeah. You saw it against the 49ers when he went off for 141 yards receiving. You saw it the week before. I forgot who they played before the Niners. I believe it was the Rams. It might have been the Rams, where he had like 70 or four catches for 74. Sure. And you're starting to see some of what Shepard can do now after the catch. His touchdown was a really explosive play where he broke away from the defender. Sure, it was a natural or unnatural pick, whatever you want to call it, by Rhett Ellison that maybe should have been called, maybe should have not been called. I don't know. I thought Ellison was just running a little bit of a drag that and got caught up. I really don't think it was intentional. But he broke away from the safety who was behind the play and a cornerback who was guarding the boundary receiver on the left side. And that's the type of plays that I saw at Oklahoma. Those are the type of plays we're starting to see more. And I think it's only the beginning for Shepard, because you get him an offensive coordinator next year, someone who can design NFL plays to take advantage of him vertically down the seam and on wheel routes and down the sideline, you know, with good matchups, because there'll be Evan Engram and Odell Beckham to deal with. And you're going to see what we truly thought he could be when they drafted him out of Oklahoma in the early second round.
Agree. And listen, coordinator and future offense, definitely something we're gonna talk about later in the podcast. Let's close the book on the Eagles game from last week, and let's talk about what everyone's probably dying to hear us talk about. The New York Giants GM search is well underway. We've got Dave Gettleman and Lewis Riddick in the mix.
And Mark Ross,
yes. Can't forget Mark Ross.
Kevin Abrams tomorrow.
Yep. Let's get into it a little bit, because you had mentioned earlier that you were sort of on different pages in regards to Gettleman. I'm a bit surprised by that. So I want to let you sort of take it away and explain what you meant by that.
Well, Gettleman's not my number one choice, and Riddick is my number one choice, and we'll get to that soon. Okay. We'll get to that soon. But I think that I've just been we obviously follow each other on Twitter. I see a lot of what you tweet, and I know you're not a Gettleman guy. And I am not as anti-Gettleman as you are. So there's exactly where I stand on Gettleman, somewhere in the middle, somewhere in between, I would say. So here's what I love about Gettleman. I'll start with that, and then I'll go into what worries me. What I love about him is I don't think people realize just how bad of a salary cap situation he walked into when he became Carolina Panthers general manager. Because at the time I was covering just the entire NFL, not just the Giants, when I was working for Fox Sports, and I was doing a lot of salary cap stuff for them. And I kind of broke down and saw what he was inheriting, and it was an absolute mess. They were well over the cap. They had bloated contracts for both Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. They had to release players immediately with dead cap tied to them that was going to affect them for 2-3 years down the line. And Gettleman ate it up and said, you know what, I got no option. Marty Herney put me in such a bad situation. And then after three straight losing seasons for the Panthers, he got them to 15-1 within 2 years. I mean, we're talking about someone who, you know, last year the Panthers roster didn't do as well. The Panthers got some injuries, especially Luke Kuechly, and they weren't as good. And I know Gettleman didn't draft Kuechly. We'll get to that later. But now, once again, they're one of the best rosters in the NFL, and this is Gettleman's doing, in my opinion. And I think just I give him so much credit for his ability to fix a salary cap situation that was so dead. And that's also – it was a blessing and a curse for him, because it's also part of the reason – why he was removed from that general manager position, because he didn't get along with the owner who didn't want to ruffle the feathers and ask Thomas Davis for a pay cut, ask Steve Smith for a pay cut, ask Greg Olsen or tell Greg Olsen you're not getting a new contract. And these are the type of tough decisions that I believe I think they need to be made. I'm not going to sit here and just be the guy who says, oh, no, you don't mess with the players. Let them, you know, run the show here. And I think that gave him a bad rep, a blessing and a curse. But what really, really, really stood out to me about Gettleman was something I read from Mike Garofalo, a former Giants beat writer. He's been gone from the beat writer position for a long time. He's been with Fox, and now he's with NFL Network. Really well-connected guy, Garofalo. And Garofalo revealed a conversation he had with Gettleman where Gettleman told him, not Eli Manning, not Plaxico Burress. It wasn't Justin Tuck. It wasn't OC in his rookie season. It wasn't Michael Strahan. He said the lifeblood of that 2007 championship team and of that 2008 team that got off to an 11-1 start before Plax shot himself was the offensive line. And Gettleman has not – it's not just words for Gettleman, because he's been a believer in building through the trenches throughout the time. He left the Giants in 2011, and if you look at the drafts after 2011, there's been a consistently, you know, downward trend in the drafts since Gettleman left. So for me, Gettleman is not the enemy. I think I understand there's negatives too, which I will touch on. He brings a lot of the same. He's been in the organization forever and whatnot, but I think that he wouldn't be the worst case scenario as a general manager. And also, I will add this. I think there's still a good possibility in his position right now, unemployed, and he used to be a Giants general manager and probably not getting another general manager opportunity anytime soon based on how it ended in Carolina. I think there's a chance he just joins the organization as just simply a talent evaluator, somebody somewhere in the organization they put him and they get him in there, they have him grinding tape again, and he gives the Giants some really good picks in the trenches and all over the place. He doesn't have to be the final decision maker, but I would love to get Gettleman back in the organization. Let me hear why you hate Gettleman.
So for me, it's he isn't the only one this applies to. If you've had previous ties to the Giants organization, I do not want you. This team needs new blood. It needs fresh blood. It needs fresh ideas. And with Gettleman, I don't want him here. You brought up the salary cap situation and how he was sort of dealt a rough hand. Well, guess what? He's probably going to be dealt an even more rough hand when he comes to the New York Giants, having to take on JPP and Olivier Vernon's contracts after terrible seasons. He's going to have to deal with Eli Manning's contract. He's going to have to deal with signing one, both, or neither of Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg. It's just not a good situation that he's going to be walking into. Two, you mentioned that he has a big focus on the trenches. If you look at his drafts with Carolina, that just proved not to be the case. I mean, if you look at his draft record, and his draft record alone, in my opinion, with Carolina should disqualify him from this job. In 2013, Star Lotulelei and Kawan Short. Okay, Kawan Short, good pick. That's pretty much it from that draft. Kelvin Benjamin in 2014, no longer on the team.
Didn't he get Klein in that draft too?
AJ Klein, Short. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a solid pick in the late
round.
There
you go. Okay, so 2014, Kelvin Benjamin, no longer on the team. Coney Ealy, right. No longer on the team. You got Trey Turner, Trey Boston, Benny Carey, I can't even pronounce the name. No one notable from that draft.
Turner's a good guard, a really good guard,
sure.
Actually.
2015, Shaq Thompson, Devin Funchess, Darrell Williams, David Mayo, Cameron Artis Payne. The only one notable there was Shaq Thompson. 2016, Vernon Butler, James Bradbury, Daryl Worley. I mean, you look at some of these names, and then you compare it to Jerry Reese's track record, and Jerry Reese has a better track record especially in the early rounds, than Dave Gettleman. So for me, it's a combination of one, I'm not a huge fan of the way he drafts. Two, he's going to be inheriting a bad cap situation anyway. And three, he has ties to the organization, which I'm just not a fan of. And especially given the options that are out there, you can do way better than Dave Gettleman. So, you know what? Maybe you're right, and maybe you can do worse than Gettleman, but he is far from being close to the top of my list. You said that you had some negatives that you wanted to throw out there about Gettleman as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of my negatives were just how he kind of faded off towards the end, started drafting receivers to a too high of a clip, similar to what we saw from Jerry Reese. And the other negative is just what you basically broke down. It is a lot of the same with Gettleman. While I do believe that you discredited some of the players that were really good from those draft classes, you did make a really good point. At the same time, his early round picks have been much bigger misses than Reese has been. And he has shown a tendency again to take these receivers to try to, you know, he goes too into the size speed type combination of players. You see it with like the Funchess and Benjamin type picks.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm not a huge fan of Gettleman coming in as a general manager, but I think at this point, from what I've been reading, it's unlikely he comes in as just the general manager. I think that it would be a kind of a package deal where you get Abrams as the general manager and you get Gettleman as just kind of a personnel, somebody who's really evaluating the talent but not making the final decision, giving the names, giving the guys he likes, giving the guys he scouted, but not picking the final players. So to me, that's not the worst case scenario. It's not the best case scenario either, though.
Right. The other guy that's been brought in, Louis Riddick, we're both big fans of.
Yes, sir.
Great analyst on ESPN. And I feel like a lot of people just hear that and they hear great analyst on ESPN and discredit him almost immediately. Let me read out some of these names and then maybe you'll understand why Dan and I are such big fans of Louis Riddick. So he was the director of pro personnel with the Eagles from 2010 to 2013. Obviously not the general manager, obviously not the end all be all, but he's helped scout and draft all of the following players: Brandon Graham, Deion Lewis, Jason Kelsey, Fletcher Cox, Michael Hendricks, Vinny Curry, Nick Foles, Brandon Boykin, Lane Johnson, and Zach Ertz. So in 3 years, he essentially established, for the most part, what is the core of this current Eagles team, minus, obviously, Wentz. So, you look at some of these names: Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Vinny Curry, studs on the defensive side of the ball, Lane Johnson, Pro Bowl tackle, Zach Ertz, busting onto the scene this year as one of the most dominant tight ends in the game. And you can't help but think that this guy would be an unbelievable addition to the New York Giants front office as general manager. Now, there's two parts to this. A lot of people, myself included, were pitching the Caserio McDaniels ticket a couple weeks ago to the New York Giants. What a lot of people don't know is that Riddick McDaniels was the ticket last offseason to the 49ers. But McDaniels didn't want that head coaching job, didn't think it would be the right fit. Now, I've spoken a lot about how McDaniels should and will be interested. He'll definitely be interested in the head coaching job for the New York Giants. Belichick talks very, very fondly about his time with New York Giants. And again, the New York Giants head coaching job, a very, very, very valuable position. Everyone who's anybody is going to be fighting for this job. Riddick McDaniels would be a bing, bang, boom, get it done, John Mara type of deal. And I think one that every New York Giants fan would be happy with. Another name to throw out there in that mix: not only the Riddick McDaniels ticket, the Riddick Saban ticket, because Riddick played for Saban down in Bama, Roll Tide. And there were rumors that Saban was at least considering the New York Giants head coaching position when it was then given to Ben McAdoo. So a lot to do with Riddick here, not only from his, draft perspective, but as well as what his sort of ticket would be in terms of a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, Riddick is that swing for the fences higher. He's my number one guy right now after jumping into the mix. In addition to what you broke down, which is two draft classes that he played a big role in, even though he was at that time director, he was promoted to director of pro personnel at the time, but he still was a scout with the Eagles for 7 years before that. He was playing a big, big role in evaluating that talent. And in addition to that, you mentioned one of the things I really like about him. It's that he played for two of the greatest head coaches of all time. Nick Saban at Bama and then Bill Belichick with the Cleveland Browns. He talked a little bit earlier. I dug this up. He gave some quotes about what it was like to play for both Belichick and Saban and what he learned from that. And some of the things he talked about were, of course, like how you set up players, the keys to giving the keys to success to players through your coaching, getting your players to just unquestionably believe in you based on the fact that, okay, you're not going to always play. You may not play the players who think they deserve to play, but if they prove they deserve to play, you'll keep feeding them, something Belichick has always done with his players. And you know what? Nick Saban has talked about Riddick before and given him a lot of props. Both of those guys are big fans of Riddick's work and of Riddick's work as a player, of his knowledge as a player. And just the fact that he's played under them means that he can bring a lot more to an organization and knowing what it takes to hire a potential head coach that could succeed for the New York Giants if Saban doesn't come and if those rumors aren't true. That's something I really like about Riddick. In addition to his resume, I really like some of the things he's said about recent NFL players and about the Giants.
You go back, Weiss did a good job of digging up some of his old
tweets. He said recently about the Giants. This is all Weiss. I saw a couple others, but most of this is all Weiss. One thing Weiss tweeted out from Riddick. Riddick tweeted, since 1991, the Giants have drafted just two linebackers within the first two rounds, neither of which amounted to much. It's time for a change. Well, you could change that, Riddick, if you come in. You could change that. I also like that he basically was all in and all over Kareem Hunt before last year's draft, calling him a faster version of Emmitt Smith. This is before he ever played a down, so that's something that really caught my eye and caught my attention. And again, like I was saying, I really like his ties to Nick Saban because I believe that Saban is at least always considering this Giants position, especially if he wins another championship this year in Alabama and they do go ahead and do that. What left is there to accomplish at the college level? There won't be a job he's ever more interested in my opinion, than the Giants head coaching job. And I don't think there will be a time where Saban will ever be more interested than right now, where he is, the top two or three pick in the NFL draft. So if they're ever going to get Saban, it's this year. Otherwise, I would say, knock it off the table and whatnot. But you know, Lewis Riddick has seen some problems within the organization for a time. He's been a big believer in a lot. He was there. This is what something Weiss also tweeted. He was there in Washington when he banged the table for Sean Taylor. So again, there's a lot to like about Riddick, in addition to the fact that, hey, maybe he's a guy who can get through and connect with the players in a way that Jerry Reese was never able to do. People underrate and underestimate how important, how big of an impact it was to have a general manager that players did not feel like they could come talk to, the players did not feel represented them, that players felt sometimes at times, talked down about them to the media, which Reese was, guilty of doing at times. Riddick is a different type of guy, and he's the type of guy who may be able to get through to Odell Beckham, someone who I still believe needs to be humbled a little bit. I know that's very, I don't want to set off alarms and get the Odell Beckham Jr. defense brigade going.
Don't make me sick him on you.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to get there, but I would love him to be just a little bit more humbled if possible, or at least feel like he can come to somebody and talk to them, and I do feel like you can get that with Riddick. So I'm pretty much all in on Riddick right now.
Yeah, me too. Would be a huge fan of that hire. Throw out some names that you're looking for in the coming days to get interviewed.
Well, we know Abrams is coming in tomorrow.
Yep.
I'm interested to see. So here's the problem with the coming days for these interviews. There's not much more the Giants can really do until the end of the season when the playoff teams are when the teams are eliminated from the search. So if they want to get Casario in from the Patriots, well, they got to wait. If they want to get Elliot Wolf, a guy who's now been linked to the Giants, Packers personnel guy who's really helped, land some of their best pick players, they're going to have to wait till the end of the season because the Packers are not making the playoffs now. But so a lot of it's going to wait. I think based on what I read from Matt's initial, presser after what went down, I think it's going to come down to one of these guys who gets interviewed before the end of the season. I think he's either going to stick with the Abrams-Gettleman combo, or he's going to say, listen, I can get that Patriots swing for the fences package deal, but instead of waiting to get Casario McDaniels, I'll just do Riddick McDaniels type thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to come down to that. In my opinion, I hope Mara makes the swing for the fences pick and goes a little bit outside of his comfort zone to try to, bring in a new era to Giants football with Riddick and then eventually McDaniels.
Yeah, I think Weiss made the point to me. People say, oh, they would never, think outside the box and hire a guy like Riddick. Well, that's what we said about them firing McAdoo and Reese before the end of the season, and here we are, looking for a new GM head coach combo going into week 16. So you never know what's going to happen. You never know when you can teach an old dog new tricks. So definitely an exciting time, and everyone will be keeping their eye out for updates on that search. Moving on, let's talk about Eli, especially as it pertains to the offseason. Obviously, he had a great game. I read out the stats earlier, proving that he could still play. Ironically enough, with that game also comes the rise of Blake Bortles down in Jacksonville, sort of squashing the Eli to Jacksonville possibility. The fact of the matter is, the Giants are going to have the number two overall pick. Now, whether or not Darnold decides to go back to school, you can assume that Josh Rosen is going to go number one to the Browns unless they receive an absurd package to trade back. So what we're looking at, and one of the reasons that I'm in favor of McDaniels coming over, is that he sort of knows how to work with that non-mobile quarterback already. He's working with probably one of the only one or two of the guys that are less mobile than Eli is in Tom Brady. He knows how to work with a veteran like Eli. Eli's cap hit is an issue. And the fact that the Giants have a high draft pick, there are just a lot of moving pieces here as it pertains to Eli's future. And that's if he even wants to come back. You know, he's a guy who wants to retire as a Giant. And if the option is on the table for them to trade, for the Giants to trade Eli, he may just say, screw it. You know what? I'm just going to retire, get my money off the books, and that'll do it. So, Dan, where do you want to start with this discussion? Because there are honestly a number of ways we could go.
Yeah, there's tons of different directions here, but I definitely want to start with the first thing you mentioned, which is the rise of Bortles being the end-all, be-all of the Eli to Jacks conversation, because I don't necessarily believe that, because the Jacksonville Jaguars, regardless of what they've seen from Bortles through the last few weeks, are going to have to make a big decision on Bortles this offseason, and that would be to re-sign him or not. I believe he is a free agent. I think they didn't. I think they chose the option to not pick up his fifth-year option, so their only options next year, since they did not pick up a fifth-year deal on his rookie option, I'm pretty sure, would be to either franchise tag him, which I guess they could do just because of the salary cap situation. Right. Their space, they have so much space. But the Jaguars don't actually have as much salary cap space as you think, because I looked into this the other day. They were pretty low on the list. They're actually lower than the Giants after going all in on Calais Campbell last year. Yeah. And a few other contracts, Malik Jackson the year before, a few massive contracts. And they're also going to have to re-sign Allen Robinson or Marquise Lee. So, you know, I don't think that they have – I think they're going to have to make a big decision on Bortles, and I don't think it's sold just yet, even with this stretch. I think he still has to prove himself in the postseason. So I'll start with that. But the other thing that you mentioned that is also important in all of this is Eli Manning's $15 million dead cap hit, or that would incur on the Giants if they released him, just based on the original extension he signed and all the guaranteed money that they've spread out throughout the years to keep their – to keep themselves under the cap. So the only really way for Eli Manning to move is via trade, and a team would have to agree to take on a lot of his cap hit. And in that situation, something people don't even talk about, Eli Manning would also have to waive his no-trade clause. So yep. I've been saying this since the start, when all the articles came out, when all the speculation came out about where Eli's going to play. I've been saying from the start, he's going to be on the New York Giants next season. He can't get cut, so unless he retires, he's already said, I don't want to retire. He already thinks he can still play football at a high level. So he's going to be the starter next year for the beginning of the season, and that's fine with me. I don't even care. If we draft Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, you'd be shocked at how many rookie quarterbacks can't read a blitz, can't deal with pressure, and would look a lot worse on the field than you think.
Absolutely.
If they were thrown right into the fire. Sure, Deshaun Watson did it. I get it. You know what? The Texans have a solid offensive line, playmakers, and a good, really good offensive schemer in Bill O'Brien. It's not that surprising to me. He's gotten a lot out of Tom Savage at times. He's gotten some stuff out of T.J. Yates is moving the ball a little bit for them. So that doesn't surprise me as much as others. And you look at it, you look at across the league, and there's a lot of situations where rookies struggle off the bat at the quarterback position due to that inability to kind of pick up the speed of the NFL game. So there's a lot worse options for the Giants than starting Eli at the beginning of 2018. But I will say this, Ethan, because it's hard for me to say and admit this, and this is the last thing I'm going to make on Eli.
Boy.
Toss it back to you. You know me from pretty much all our conversations, from every appearance I've made on here. I've been the biggest Eli supporter there pretty much is. I've been accused of being biased plenty of times throughout my life. But I have seen a different Eli Manning over this season. And even last week, he played well. Definitely played better than he has been. But a lot of the big plays came after the catch. There's no denying it. And I still think Eli Manning can be super successful in a no-huddle, up-tempo attack at all 8 home games. It has to be in place all 8 home games when he can hear all the calls. Because that's where Eli Manning really gets the most, when he gets the defense on their heels, when they can't set up, and when he's dictating the action. And that's what we saw last week, and that's why he was able to move the ball so well. That's what we saw against the Eagles earlier in the season, even though it was in Philly. And that's why he was able to move the ball. That no-huddle, up-tempo attack. You saw it a little bit against the Bucks earlier this season, they moved the ball. But if you get him outside of that no-huddle attack, right now he's a guy who, let's face it, he needs a lot around him to be successful. there you can make the case that, you know, the Giants situation around Eli is atrocious this season. And of course it is. They've lost their three best offensive linemen. They lost their two best receivers, and their third best one was out for most of the games, and now he's playing through a slightly torn hamstring. Their offensive line wasn't good to begin with, and he's playing in an awful offensive scheme. All that is true, but at the same time, you know, some quarterbacks have done well without a lot around them. We've seen this throughout plenty of the years. I can come up with examples. So to me right now, I'm okay with Eli Manning starting next season and leaving him in as long as he's good, but I'm all in on the bandwagon of you draft a quarterback if you have a shot at Darnold and Rosen, and I haven't even ruled out Lamar Jackson yet either, who I need to do some game tape study on to see where I stand on him, because I'm a big believer in what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything that you're saying on Eli is, you know, incredibly controversial at all. I think that, you know, obviously there are going to be some people on the Twitter sphere that disagree with you, as there always are, but and not just with you specifically. I mean, there's always going to be people that disagree. When it comes to Eli, yeah, listen, you know, if he was to take a pay cut and, you know, let them build an offensive line around him, then yeah, he will be successful. But given the weapons surrounding him, both at receiver, both at running back, and also the offensive line, I mean, the guy is just, he's set up to fail, which is, you know, sort of the counter argument for throwing Davis Webb in there while, you know, we do need to see him. It's like, well, listen, if a veteran like Eli isn't going to do it, you know, what the hell is Davis Webb going to do with, you know, a broken offensive line and no good running back? So, you know, I get it. And I think when you have draft capital this high, you obviously have to look at some options. I will say this. If Eli is the plan for next year and there's a standout offensive tackle or Saquon is there at number two and you really like him, I don't think you could go wrong. But at number two, if there's a team that's really, really itching to trade up and take someone like, I mean, I'm saying it, I want to throw up just saying it because I'm not a fan. Someone like Josh Allen, just because he's a tall white guy who can throw the ball real far, then you have to consider moving back, especially because there are going to be teams in that 8 to 12 range who really need a quarterback. And if you can compile picks, which is something that a new GM should want to do, I know that new GM is going to want to sort of put a stamp on the franchise, which he could obviously do in the form of a quarterback. But if you're to move back to the 8 to 12 range, there's going to be a number of good players that you're going to be able to take upon getting not only an extra second round pick this year, an extra third round pick this year. You could get an extra 2019 second round pick. You could get a lot from moving from number 2 to number 8, 9, 10, or 11. And not only that, forget about the talented players that are there. You can still get guys like Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson in that range. You know, Lamar Jackson's a guy I've been high on. I still am high on. I think he should absolutely be a first-round pick. I don't think he will be because of the stereotype against, you know, the shorter mobile quarterbacks. And sort of the same goes for Baker Mayfield. But I do think that you can still get your franchise guy while trading back. And to be quite honest, I've made this clear. I'm not a fan of Darnold. I would be very okay with Josh Allen. But I do think that the value is there for other quarterbacks if the Giants were to trade back.
Yeah, I think it all just comes down to where you stand on if you believe that there is a franchise quarterback in this draft or more than one franchise quarterback right in this draft. If you believe that, then I don't think you ever pass on one when you have the opportunity exactly, because you don't get these opportunities often. And now, I still have a lot of work to do on these guys, and that's something I plan to do the minute the season ends. I've seen about 7 games from Rosen because one of my good buddies is a UCLA fan, so we talk a lot of Rosen. I've seen about 2 or 3 games from Darnold, and I've seen only like 2 games from Lamar. I'm not jumping in on Baker yet. I'm not as pro Baker as you are. Yeah. As a lot of people are. I also just know the Giants aren't going to draft Baker Mayfield just based on everything that they've done as a organization over the course of, you know, this organization. Yeah. That's to say they probably won't draft Lamar Jackson either for that reason, which scares me because I actually think Lamar Jackson, from a physical standpoint, from what I've seen so far, has the most upside by far of
absolutely
any of the three.
Absolutely.
But I will say this, from what I've seen so far from both Darnold and Rosen, especially Rosen, I am almost sure that at worst case scenario, Josh Rosen is Eli Manning. That's just the way I've seen it.
Wow.
It's a comparison I've seen for him early on. I like it a lot. He's really good in fourth quarters. He throws really good ball over the top. He's got great arm strength. He's a little bit more mobile than Eli. He makes a lot of errors when it comes to interceptions and just challenges. You know, he makes a lot of challenging passes, not afraid to try to stick it in there and make throws in tight windows. And I just think the best thing I like about Rosen, and I've watched him for a long time. I actually watched his high school highlights because my UCLA buddy was all over him when he came into UCLA. And he was throwing, you know, darts, gems in high school. Like, this dude was throwing it 55 yards over the top in stride bombs. Like,
wow.
So I really think he's the real deal. And I do think he'll go number one to the Browns, honestly. But, you know, I like what I've seen from Darnold. Me and you are a little bit different on Darnold, but I'm not going to make my final call on him yet because I want to actually dig in and watch more of him. But I really like Darnold, and what I really like the most about Darnold is that he makes plays on the run. And I think what I've learned the most from these last few years at Eli Manning is at this stage of the NFL and the way things go with how hard it is to hold up coverage in the back end and not commit a holding penalty and not commit interference at the current, you know, the current rate where the NFL's at. To get a guy like that who can make plays on the run, a guy like Russell Wilson type, obviously Darnold would never be the runner that Russell Wilson is, but where Russell Wilson really stands out to me is the throws he makes on the run after the pocket breaks down. And that's something that stood out to me with Darnold as well. Former linebacker in high school, Sam Darnold. I don't know if you knew that. I found that pretty interesting.
Yeah, me too.
Tough guy and pretty mobile for, you know, can make plays and throws the ball. To me, from what I've seen, the thing I like the most about him is he throws the ball just as well on the run as he does from a clean pocket. And, you know, that's something that stands out to me. And I'll wrap it up there, but I do want to say one thing that's really the reason why I'm more down on Eli Manning than I've ever been is just I think that the one thing, that the part of his game that's really scared me the most is his deep ball. His deep passing by the numbers has gone down dramatically over the past two seasons. And that's something that I don't know if you get back later in your career. I don't know if that can be blamed. You know, you can blame it on a muddy pocket. That's fine. But I don't know if that's for sure what the reason is. So, you know, to me, if I watch more of Darnold and I think feel the same way about him as Rosen, and the same goes for Jackson, I'm going to be going all in, and you'll hear me loud and clear on Twitter to get a quarterback.
All right, I'm with it. Let's talk players with no buzz. That was one of your topics. I assume, well, you specified a little more. You said going into next season, but the main focus now seems to be on Damon Harrison's Pro Bowl snub.
Oh, I mean, that's unbelievable that he was stumped from both. This is just how it goes for a guy who plays the nose tackle position.
Exactly.
He knows it, and that's what he said about it. He knows it. I mean, this guy is, in 4 of 6 seasons, leads Pro Football Focus in run stops. You don't want to hear Pro Football Focus stats, fine, I'll give you NFL stats. He leads all defensive linemen with 66 tackles this season. What more do you want? The Giants' run defense is literally the only functioning part of this defense that has 4 street free agents playing on them right now because of Damon Harrison, okay? I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson is earning positive grades from Pro Football Focus, and I'm convinced it's because he plays next to Damon Harrison.
He's playing next to the group.
And I'm convinced the same thing happened with Jonathan Hankins, honestly. But that's another story. So this guy is the best run stopper in the NFL. That, to me, is an auto Pro Bowl. If the Pro Bowl meant anything, he would automatically get in. But some of the guys I wanted to touch on that I really think could be bright parts of this Giants future. I'm going to start with Brett Jones, who I've been
love, you know, Brett Jones, big been harping
fan
on
of Brett
him.
Jones. Yeah, Brett Jones has been awesome. He's stepped in and done just as well, if not better, than Weston Richburg. When we get to this
he's
offseason,
he's going to be the center next year. Absolutely.
Exactly. When we get to this offseason, I don't even want to hear the Weston Richburg talk. Weston Richburg's going to come at the Giants and use his brand name and draft pedigree as reason to re-sign him to some big contract. Meanwhile, he hasn't played dominant football since 2015. Blame last season on a hand injury, got concussed this year, missed the rest of the season, which is unfortunate, but he wasn't playing that great of football even before the concussion. Okay, how about another guy who really has stood out to me a lot? Tavarius King. I hate to say it, he looks like a journeyman, but like, why not bring this guy back? He's a guy who can come in if they want to save that $5.5 million in cap space.
I said it last week. I said he should be the wide receiver 3 next year.
Right. You get him in there. He's cheap. He's under contract for nothing. You save the $5.5 million, which would result in zero dead cap money by releasing Brandon Marshall. And I'm more pro Marshall than most people. I think he got a raw deal this year in this Ben McAdoo scheme. But, you know, this is a team, like we've talked about, strapped against the cap. I know Kevin Abrams came out and said, we're in healthy cap position. But then I took a look, and they had the 20th most cap space. Yeah, sure, they have $32 million as of now. But so that may be considered healthy as of now, but in relation to the rest of the league, it's not healthy. Also, they have to re-sign Justin Pugh, potentially DJ Fluker, potentially Brett Jones.
Looking at an extension for Odell, it's not good.
Looking at an extension for Odell and Landon at some point. So, I mean, this is not that healthy, okay?
Right.
So we're going to have to make tough decisions. And I like the idea, the potential of Tavares King coming in. And how about Rhett Ellison? No one talks about Rhett Ellison.
No one realizes
what he did. That Darkwa touchdown run, I watched Brian Baldinger break it down online. The dude blocked two players out of the way to create a hole.
Hashtag Baldy's breakdowns.
Yeah. I mean, this dude has earned. Let me just double check this because I was looking at this earlier this week and I just want to make sure that I'm right on this before I said it. This dude is the second best blocker on all of Pro Football Focus at the tight end position.
Wow.
Number two, Rhett Ellison. Just what the Giants said he would be when they signed him. They said, this was the one thing I'll give Reese credit for. They said that he'll be one of the best blockers in the league. They said he already is one of the best blockers in the league. And they're right. But finally, the Giants are using him. He's only had 442 snaps this year. And the percentage has gone up in the second half of the season after Sullivan took over. What a mess. What a joke that McAdoo couldn't play this guy more. Every time they throw him a target, he catches the ball. He has no drops that I can remember. He's not that bad after the catch as well. He breaks a decent amount of tackles. He's been decent. You know, I think he could be used even better next year with McDaniels, a guy like that who knows how to use tight ends in addition to Ingram. So those are the guys I'm excited about right now. Obviously, on the defensive side of the ball, it's a little tougher to get excited. Darian Thompson hasn't played as well as I thought he would in his second season. Eli Apple is a mental nutcase, and that really kills me. And then we know the rest, basically. The biggest issue going into next year, if we just flip it real quick.
Go for it.
Because I did want to hear your thoughts on this. What the hell's going on with JPP, man?
Dude, it's bad. And honestly, it's real bad. I think people can go back and search. I might even do it later out of my own curiosity. There were points even before that contract, like maybe a couple years ago, where I was sort of down on him and didn't think he was worth the money. But then he shows up last year, coming back from that hand injury. And, you know, his run defense was A+. He was getting the pressures at least. This year, I don't know, man. And it's a lot of money to commit to a guy who only feasts against the bad teams. It really is.
Right.
You know, at least with Olivier Vernon, you get the really good consistent run defense and you're still getting the pressures. And you know, maybe part of this is Spags' defensive system because, as you know, I'm not a huge fan of it. But
me either.
Having so much money tied up in both those guys, it's trouble. And I think whoever the GM is, come January, February, March, whenever that decision is made, whoever that GM is going to have some tough decisions to make. And, you know, they're going to have to move at least one of these bad contracts before the draft. And it's going to be weird, especially because the new guy coming in, assuming it's not a Gettleman or a Mark Ross, they're going to have no connection to head cases like Eli Apple or bloated contracts like JPP, right? So there's going to be no emotional connection there. They shouldn't have any problems cutting ties or shipping them out for, you know, obviously a heavy discount in draft stock if it means freeing up that cap space. Because I've said it before, I've said it again, the biggest reason the Giants are cap-strapped, especially on the defensive side of the ball, was Jerry Reese's inability to draft in the middle to late rounds and get effective players that you can fill in. Okay?
Yes.
You can give him all the credit in the world for going out and spending money on the defense like that was a hard thing to do, but he went out there and got a dominant run stopper in Damon Harrison. He went out and got one of the best PFF rated guys in Olivier Vernon, and then he broke the bank on a guy like Janoris Jenkins. And don't get me wrong, I love all of them. They're great players. But when you fail to draft in the mid to late rounds and your team lacks so much depth that the only way to fix the 32nd ranked defense is to go out there and spend, it's going to be bad. And whoever comes in is going to need to fix Jerry Reese's mess.
I couldn't agree more with that. But I will say this because I have to throw some caution.
Sure.
I hate to say it, but well, first of all, I'll start with this. Just the positive. We'll start with the positive. Olivier Vernon's legitimately playing through a high ankle sprain this year, and his is like really bad. His isn't like Landon Collins, which is he's terming as a high ankle sprain, which is probably just a low ankle sprain. This is a bad one, and he's not the same player as he was, and he was really good at the beginning of the year, Vernon. So I'm going to give him a wash this year, but again, now that's 2 years in a row where he's dealt with a major injury.
Right.
That's not good. But
which
I will
also,
say this.
I will say this. Shout out to Spags for overplaying the shit out of his defensive
right,
ends.
Right.
So, you
good
know
job,
what? If maybe he's playing like 80% of snaps instead of 93, he's a little bit healthier.
Shout out to Spags for continuing to use zero blitzes the past 3 weeks with no
insane.
One, with no linebackers or cornerbacks
insane.
That even play in the NFL. But just keep zero blitzing. That's the way. That's how you do it. I mean, there's not much he can do to fix this this defense with what's
right.
left. But zero blitzing is certainly not the
it's
way to
crazy.
Go with what's left on the field. But anyway, what I hate to say is this. I mean, I love what you're saying, and I love the idea of unloading one of these contracts before the draft. But I'm going to give it the percentage chances of 1%, because that's just unfortunately not how the NFL the NFL salary cap is a very strict and very unforgiving I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it's a very strict and unforgiving force. And JPP's contract is almost impossible to move based on how much guaranteed money the Giants gave him up front and how little of that guaranteed money they used against the current 2017 cap. So JPP, someone who's trading for JPP, now there are options for the Giants. Giants can say, hey, we'll trade him to you for a sixth or fifth round pick, right, and we'll take half the cap hit, because no team is going to inherit the entire cap hit for Jason Pierre-Paul, except for maybe the Browns. The Browns are one of the only potential trade partners they can find. There's not just the Browns. There will probably be three or four teams like the Browns who have that $80 to $100 million in cap space and can take it on. But they're only going to give you back maybe a fourth if you're lucky, fourth conditional, most likely.
Dan, you know, I got to interject here, because you've just given me an idea. Now, I will say this. Yes, you're right. When I say trade JPP, I'm not expecting a home run, right? I'm talking like a Brandon Marshall to the Jets type trade, where you're getting like a fifth or a sixth or a conditional back, right? The sole purpose of that is not to get draft capital. It's just get the money off the books. Now,
right,
you mentioned the Browns as a possibility. What if, you know, their defense is already incredibly underrated. What if the Giants really, really liked Rosen and decided to trade up to number one with the Browns, including JPP to play opposite Myles Garrett, retain half the salary, and then throw in whatever other picks would be required?
I like it. I like the idea. I mean,
I would need to do the cap math on it, but just spur of the moment idea, since you brought up the Browns, I don't know. I think something could be done here.
Well, the Browns are projected right now to have $116 million in cap space. This coming off, or sorry, 111. The Niners are $116. So, and no team's really even that close to them. There's a big drop off after that, and then an even bigger drop off. So they certainly have the cap space to do it. They certainly have the game tape to go on where he dominated the Browns last season for 3.5 sacks and pick 6. But it is a bit of a pipe dream. I want it to happen, but we'll see. And I hate to say it, I loved JPP last year, but it looks to me like he's stealing money this season. It really does. Unless, you know, maybe he's just not reporting some injury he had. That's my only hope, I guess.
Right. Yeah, no, it's bad. And you never hope that someone's injured, but for the sake of the Giants and the cap, you hope he's playing with an injury, because that way he can come back and, you know, be dominant next year. All right. Let's look ahead to the Arizona game. Honestly, in my opinion, not much to look forward to. You just got to hope the Giants lose this one. You got anything on it before we move on to some questions?
Nothing too much. I mean, it's tough for me to root for the Giants to lose. But you know, at this point, after the Eagles game, I wanted them to beat the Eagles just because I have so many friends that are freaking Eagles fans that I don't want to hear from. And it would have been just a funny, nice thing to put on there. But as far as the Cardinals game, I'm okay with them losing at this point, which is crazy as it seems. But the one thing I do want to see is Davis Webb start week 17.
There we go.
I hope they're starting to move in that direction. But we'll find out, and we'll find out, I think, after this Cardinals game, because I think Spags is looking for some kind of out where the offense plays poorly so he can have a reason, even though it's the stupidest logic I've ever heard. Like, Spags, this is unbelievable. They're 2-12, and Spags is trying to win every game. Like, I get it. It's understandable. You're not supposed to tank, whatever. And, like, you know, you're trying to fight for some kind of job you think you have a chance to get. But come on, Spags is not going to be the head coach next year.
There's no chance.
He has to realize that. Come on.
It's crazy. All right. Let's get into some questions. Nick Beck, the loyal listener. If Darnold stays in school and Rosen goes one, are the Giants going quarterback at 2 or 3 or wherever they pick? Seems like a small reach. If Darnold goes back to school, which, you know, I don't think he should at this point, because, you know, given the number of teams that need a quarterback and the fact that Rosen is pretty much a lock for number one, he can rest assured he's not going to the Browns, and I think he should declare. In Nick's scenario here, if Rosen goes number one, and Darnold does stay in school, I don't think the Giants go number 2 at quarterback. I think if that is the case, they try to trade back, as I said earlier, to the 8-12 range.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can teach, you know, I don't think the Giants are going to completely overhaul what we've seen from this organization throughout the course of history. They want Darnold or Rosen. They don't want Lamar Jackson. They don't want Baker Mayfield. And hopefully, I hope they don't want
Josh Allen.
If they draft Josh Allen at number 2 or
I'm already excited for the reports to come out that they're scouting him, and then Twitter just goes bananas.
I'm honestly feeling that if Josh Allen is on the Giants, it's going to be a dark day in my life, and I will hope that I have like some friends and family around to keep. I'll need it. But yeah, I mean, those are the three guys that are that interest the Giants at quarterback. I know how they scout. I know what they want. Yeah. I know they believe in their minds that you need one of these type of quarterbacks to play at MetLife Stadium. I don't think that's true. I think it's kind of an old school style of thinking. And from what, like I said, from what I've seen from Lamar so far, I'm super impressed. And I would hope that maybe you bring in Riddick and something might change. So I'm not going to completely rule it out, but I will say if I had to answer his question, the answer would be no, they won't draft a quarterback. I also agree with you. I think that Darnold is going to come out. I think, honestly, Darnold and Rosen both want to get drafted by the Giants. I'm going to say that right now. If Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen were asked, what's your ideal scenario? It's I get drafted by the New York Giants.
You're choosing New York over Cleveland. I mean, it's
or whoever's behind them, the Colts, a completely, you know, a franchise that might have ruined Andrew Luck by playing them through injury.
Crazy.
Or, there's so many different options that are worse for him to draft in that top half of the draft. They're worse for either player. But yeah, you know, if you're going to ask me if one of them's not there, if Darnold doesn't declare, then sure, I think they won't take a quarterback.
Yep. From Eli Minated, very clever name. To Webb or not to Webb, that is the question. To Webb, just Webb it. Might as well see what he's got. Best case scenario, you find your quarterback of the future in two games. Worst case, you lose out and get the number two pick. There's really, you just play him. I mean, we know what Eli can do with this offense. Just play Webb. We need to see.
Yeah. You don't have to go ahead and play. If you play Webb and you don't have to make your decision on Webb's future based on this two-game sample size either. It's just something extra you get to work with.
Exactly.
And even if the Giants draft a quarterback, honestly, you know, Eli Manning is going to retire at some point within the range of when Davis Webb's contract is up. So you're going to have at least one season, I believe, maybe two, where Webb is the backup quarterback or the starter against whoever they draft. Just because they draft someone at number one overall, trust me, if Davis Webb looks freaking legit, they'll play him and they'll trade the other guy who has the draft pedigree and who had all the teams coming in scouting. If you draft Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen, there are tons of teams who are going to have unbelievably positive scouting reports. All 32. It doesn't matter if they had a chance at him or not. They're still going to do their due diligence. So you get Webb in there, and if Webb looks great, that is honestly probably the best scenario. Webb shows out, looks awesome for the Giants after Eli's finished with his career, and Webb is actually the franchise quarterback, and they get to deal Rosen or Darnold.
That would be hilarious.
For like, you know, a first-round pick or something, like the Patriots did with Garoppolo, even though they got a second out of that.
Still good draft stock.
Right, exactly. So. Yeah. I hate the people who say, you know, why would you draft a quarterback? You just drafted Davis Webb. Quarterback is a one position where I don't think you can draft enough of, honestly. I really don't. I'll sacrifice a position on the 53-man roster who plays special teams to have three quarterbacks if I have to for a couple years.
I mean, not to compliment the Redskins, but hey, RG3 and Kirk Cousins.
Right.
Exactly. This Rocky asks, why does Ethan use his tonsils as an excuse, man up? Listen, fair point. All fair points. Your boy Michael Moore, Pro Football Focus, will Davis Webb win as many or more Super Bowls than Eli Manning? I'm going to say no. But you never know there. Last question. This is one that I got today from my buddy Mike.
I got a couple too that I'll get to.
Okay, perfect. So not the last one, but from my buddy Mike. In more general terms, if the Giants were to look past Eli, do you try to get Kirk or a Tyrod and address other areas in the draft or go after quarterbacks in the draft? Kirk is not an option strictly for cap hit. I also don't think that he is a quarterback capable of winning a Super Bowl unless under the perfect circumstances. I think he's good. I don't think he's great. So that's going to be a no for me on Kirk. I am a huge Tyrod guy. I'm sure you saw when, you know, during the Nathan Peterman debacle, I was sticking up for Tyrod. I'm a huge Tyrod fan. Do I think the Giants are going to go after him? No. Do I think that Eli Manning is going to be on the roster next year? Absolutely. So, you know, I think this question is sort of moot. But if I'm picking between the two, it's Tyrod over Kirk, both from a talent perspective as well as a financial perspective.
Right. Kirk Cousins, if you put him on the Giants this year, he would be so – people are crapping so on Eli bad. Manning. If you think Eli Manning is looking bad this year, don't even – joke him. Don't even think that Kirk Cousins would look even close. Like, Kirk Cousins is a good system quarterback in Gruden's very, very successful offensive scheme that does a really good job of figuring out how to get receivers open. But he's had Trent Williams his whole career. Come on. Like, in addition to Brandon Scherff, in addition to Morgan Moses, who's a really underrated right tackle. So, no, not Kirk Cousins. And then Tyrod Taylor, I like Tyrod Taylor, but the Giants aren't going to spend money on a quarterback. No. If they're getting rid of Eli Manning, it's Davis Webb and whoever they draft.
Right. All right. Throw out your questions. Let's do it.
So I have two weird questions. Oh, one is from, unrelated to football that we'll throw out there. One is from Ryan, our buddy.
Oh, boy.
He said, what is the most elite fruit? I'm going to throw it to you first.
Fruit?
The most elite fruit.
Fruit. Wow. Elite. Wow, that's a good question. Gun the head with no time to prepare. I'm just going to throw out mango.
I was going to say mango, but then I was going to say. But no, listen, I was going to say mango is not the most elite fruit. Mango is one of the, is the best fruit. Mango is like the high upside fruit. You know, you get mango, it's going to be great most of the time, but there are some mangoes that aren't ripe.
But artificial mango flavor, you can never go wrong.
That I agree with. If we're talking about artificial flavoring, I thought we were talking about real fruit.
No, listen, I'm just saying overall mango, you know?
Okay, mango. Any sense of form. So I'm going to go with the most elite fruit, and people are going to really hate this call. I'm 100% sure of it, but bananas. I really am a big banana guy. I believe they give me energy for the day. They help me with the process of relieving some things from my body. Bananas are a versatile fruit. They're good before the gym. They're good for a lot of different things. So I'm a big banana guy. I'm going to say that's the most elite fruit because it does the most for me.
That might be your worst take of all time.
Bananas going to be bad.
At least give me an apple. Jesus
apple.
Christ.
Apple's up there for me. I don't know why I'm such a big banana fan, dude.
Oh, my God.
That's such a bad take. That's actually not my worst take of all time. If you want to hear my worst take of all time, and I regretted it the minute I said it. Oh, this is so bad. I was at a diner with my buddies a couple weeks ago, and one of my buddy's girlfriends asked, we're going around the table, what's your favorite French fry? And I said steak fry, like the crispy kind. And so have you ever had like a good crispy steak fry? But no, devastatingly bad answer.
For sure, waffle fry.
It's curlier waffle. And
yeah, curlier
fry.
Waffle.
People said steak fry is the worst fry. Okay. People said this is the worst take they've ever heard, let alone just from me. So, I'm really rolling hot on bad takes. The season's taking a big toll on me, man.
Not just that food take. Stick to the football takes, not the food takes.
Yeah. I'm not myself, but clearly I'm calling out bananas and steak fries as two of the what is wrong with me here?
Bananas and steak fries.
I have no time to prepare for the elite fruit question either. Yeah. And I didn't have time to prepare for this next one either, which is what are shows on Netflix right now that you're watching that are underrated?
The Office for the eighth time, definitely underrated the eighth time around. outside of that, honestly, there haven't been that many Netflix shows that, I haven't watched Stranger Things. I feel like that's a hot one that people get angry at me for. So I can't really give a good answer for this one.
I'm going to go with two shows people might not know about that I like a lot. One is Big Mouth, which is a cartoon comedy right now on Netflix that you should definitely check out. It's with guys Jason Matzoukas, Nick Kroll. It's about kids growing up and going through puberty. It's absolutely hilarious and outrageous. The other one I would go with is a show called Easy on Netflix. It's kind of about just like it's different. It's an anthology, different stories about people living their lives in Chicago. Those are two really interesting shows no one's seen that I would definitely throw out there. And obviously I've had a lot more time to watch TV shows because the Giants freaking suck this year.
Suck.
This has been the most disgraceful, pathetic, disgusting season I've ever experienced as a fan. It was worse than when they went 4-12 the year before Eli because there wasn't as much hope that season. But
yeah, there was a lot of hope this season.
There's a lot of hope, and it's crazy.
It's gone. All right, let's wrap it up. We are at a bit over an hour, so nice long episode. Dan, temporary co-host, thank you for filling in. We appreciate it. Number one guest, number one temporary co-host. We appreciate you. Your food takes stink, but your Giants takes are always good. Welcome back anytime. You'll obviously be back. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Schneier NFL. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So go follow him at Dan Schneier NFL. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify to come. I'm on Twitter, Ethan GSN, the blog, Gotham SN. And I will speak to you guys next week. Peace.